Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Last September, then Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump came to Miami and pledged to reverse President Obama's changes to America's policy toward Cuba.
All of the concessions that Barack Obama has granted the Castro regime were done through executive order, which means the next president can reverse them. And that I will do unless the Castro regime meets our demands. Not my demands, our demands. You know what the demands are.
And we will hear more about what those demands are today. Trump is now president. He returns to Miami, bringing with him changes to the Obama-era policy. The changes affect American travelers to Cuba and where they can spend money on the island. The Trump imprint on Cuba policy also includes stiffer rules on doing business. Florida Senator Marco Rubio called them strategic and targeted changes in a Facebook video posted Thursday.
The goal of these policies is very simple. We want to empower and we want to strengthen the Cuban people without strengthening the Cuban military, which controls a significant percentage of their economy.
The policy, the politics, and the people affected is what we will talk about this hour on the Florida Roundup ahead of President Trump's speech. You will hear that speech live here on WLRN Friday, just after 1 p.m. Have you taken advantage of the normalization of relations with Cuba over the past 2.5 years? Have you traveled there? Have you done business on the island? What would tighter rules around travel and trade do for the South Florida economy? How will it affect you, your household, your family, your business? Join our conversation here, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also send us your comment via Twitter, at WLRN is our handle. Claire Munoz lives in Miami.
I am in favor of rolling back all policies because people forget how, as children, before we left Cuba in the early 60s, we were traumatized by the Castro regime. People forget the assassination. People forget what this regime, Castro, did to Cuba, its economy, its people.
The pain remains fresh for Claire in Miami. Lenny and Delray sent us this comment. President Obama made the right decision to open a channel between Cuba and the U.S. He continues to say he thinks eventually ties between America could be strengthened if we, quote, let this thaw continue. Join the conversation now, 800-743-WLRN on the telephone, 800-743-9576. Mary Marquez is the executive editor for El Nuevo Herald. David Adams is a senior editor at Univision. They both join us from our studios in Doral. David, first of all, describe what you know about the policy changes.
There's actually not too much in the changes, in the sense that there are basically two thrusts to it. The principal one being a ban on all financial transactions with any of the military-owned, military-run state companies in Cuba. And the military owns a lot of hotels, some real estate. They're in quite a lot of Cuba's economic activity. And then the other thing is a tweak to the current travel regulations, which will limit so-called people-to-people travel to groups only and not individuals. A lot of people were going to Cuba under in recent months under the Obama administration, just simply picking up and going individually under this people-to-people category. And now you won't be able to do that. It'll have to be done through an organized group package.
Miriam, how significant are these changes we expect to hear from President Trump?
Well, we expected a rollback. I think the issue is, until the rules are done, and Treasury will have to do a lot of those rules, it's unclear how much. For instance, the people-to-people contacts going through organizations, nonprofits, church groups, a lot of those times, I had been invited a few times. Those groups had contracts. They had to go through the government to government-run hotels. So, how do you continue keep people-to-people contacts? Will the government be willing in Cuba to change it to B&Bs, Airbnbs? Will there be some, line? It seems there's some line. Will it allow maybe those hotels that have partnerships with the Cuban government, such as the hotels that are run by Spanish companies? Mm-hmm. That's going to be part of what you're going to see when it comes to Americans trying to get there. A lot of the other stuff is not being touched. For instance, Cuba being on the terror list is not going to be touched. It's
not on the terror list.
Exactly.
Right. And it's not
that
going
was removed
to be on the
by Obama, and it's not going to be touched. That's a significant one, I think.
And no change to the embassies, either the Cuban embassy in Washington or the U.S. embassy in Havana. No changes to what Americans can bring back from Cuba, for instance. I want to go to NPR's White House correspondent Scott Horsley, joins us from Washington. Scott, tell us how this policy took shape since the inauguration of President Trump.
Well, this is very much a political payback from the president to the most conservative elements of the Cuban-American community in South Florida, who supported him in last year's election. And he credits that support from Cuban Americans in Florida with helping him to eke out a narrow win in that state, which, of course, was crucial to him now being in the White House. In discussing this policy change with reporters at the White House last night, officials opened their presentation not by talking about human rights in Cuba, not by talking about economic opportunities or diplomatic initiatives. They began by talking about domestic U.S. politics and that the president was keeping a pledge he made to political supporters in South Florida.
That pledge we played just a few moments ago, that he would reverse the Obama-era policies. What about the role of Senator Marco Rubio and Representative Mario Diaz-Balart in shaping the president's thinking and shaping the final policy points that we're likely to hear today?
Well, I think they were instrumental in shaping this policy, even though perhaps they would have liked to see the White House go even further in rolling back the Obama initiatives. But this is very much the handiwork of Senator Rubio, who is accompanying the president on Air Force One as he travels down to Miami today. And Congressman Diaz-Balart will also be on hand when the changes are announced there in Little Havana. They are, by the way, a minority within the Congress. I mean, you have a majority of U.S. senators who wanted to go in the opposite direction and basically ease the travel limitations for Americans traveling to Cuba. You have a number of House members, in particular from states that have farm products or mm-hmm. other business that they want to do in Cuba, who wrote to the president and said, you know, please don't make these changes. But the president is bucking that sentiment and what is, frankly, a majority sentiment among American citizens in order to satisfy the desires of the most conservative wing of the Cuban-American community there. And I don't have to tell you, I mean, your listeners know better than me, Florida International University says even in South Florida, Cuban-Americans support lifting the embargo.
Right.
But The oldest exiles, the most conservative exiles, are the ones that the president is reaching out to with this initiative.
And, of course, the Obama-era changes didn't affect the embargo. The embargo is embedded in U.S. law, and there are specific restrictions and criteria necessary in order for that embargo to be lifted. The Trump-era policy we're expected to hear in less than an hour doesn't address the embargo. That remains the law of the land. But what was discarded, Scott? Do we know what Senator Rubio or Representative Diaz-Balart or other hardliners that have been supporting a more stricter and restrictive policy toward Cuba, what they've been pushing for that perhaps the administration either couldn't support or couldn't get other agencies to support?
Well, as some of your guests have talked about, this is not going to be a shuttering of the U.S. embassy. It is not going to be, say, a reinstatement of the wet foot, dry foot policy. It is not going to cut off agricultural trade with Cuba, which was also enshrined in law. That goes back to the early part of the century, this century, when Congress authorized agricultural shipments to Cuba, really in a hope of winning support from Republican lawmakers from farm states for an opening of Cuban policy. So some of those changes are not going to happen. This is not as big a step. It's not a complete reversal of the Obama diplomatic thaw. Or economic thaw. It is, however, a step backwards.
Scott Horsley covers the White House for NPR. Scott, thanks for your time this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Tom.
I want to turn back to our other guests here, David Adams, senior editor at Univision, Miriam Marquez, executive editor for El Nuevo Herald. Miriam, it's impossible to remove the politics from this kind of decision, as Scott Horsley was just reporting. Is this a significant change in the relationship between Senator Rubio and President Trump, for instance, two that clearly went at each other for the better part of 18 months during the campaign.
Well, Patty Mazzei had a very good story on the behind the scenes. Both Patty and El Nuevo reporter Nora Gámez Torres had been working on this for months, as is most of the press that cares about this issue. And you know, there were obviously some trade-offs that were made. For instance, the support of the Trump Care, or what will become whatever that vote is. Those sorts of things have happened. And the Congress, the members of Congress say that there really hasn't. But I think it's clear that they've had to make some accommodation to put some pressure on President Trump. He needed a vote on and needed a vote to support his changes to domestic policy, and they're trying to help him with that. And so that's part of the politicking going around. And also Trump, you know, really respects loyalists, and he does feel very strongly that the vote of the Cuban American community, the older Cuban American community, and also the Bay of Pigs veterans were pivotal in his success in South Florida. South Florida, Miami-Dade still went for Hillary Clinton, but nevertheless it made inroads, and he's appreciative of that.
David, I want you to talk about that. South Florida went for Secretary Clinton during the presidential election. By a margin of about 750,000 votes in the three counties alone she won. She won significantly in Miami-Dade County as well. But I had senior members of Cuban leaders of the Cuban community here tell me that if it weren't for the support for President Trump within the Cuban community, he may not have been able to make up that margin elsewhere in the state of Florida.
I think, to be honest, that's pretty much been knocked on the head. I mean, Trump didn't win Florida by such a small margin. He won by over 100,000 votes, and there aren't 100,000 Bay of Pigs veterans in South Florida, I'm sorry. To be perfectly honest, I don't get any of this. President Trump, I think Miriam's absolutely right. This is all about loyalty, and Scott said it too. This is all about political payback. President Trump is clearly being extremely loyal and remembering, I think, his visit here to the 2506 Brigade last year did impress him. It moved him. As it moves many, you know, these are old gentlemen who risked their lives in a forlorn invasion attempt sponsored by the CIA that went horribly, horribly wrong. And a lot of them spent time in jail in Cuba. But obviously they've been dying off over the years. And I'm afraid they're being replaced by younger Cuban Americans who think very, very differently. Mm-hmm. And Obama, what was brilliant about Obama's policy is that he realized that, and he was encouraged in South Florida by Cuban-American leaders, not all of them young, some young, but also some older people like Joe Arriola, the former manager of the city of Miami, and his son Ricky, who's a Miami Beach city commissioner. And they are the future of the Cuban-American vote in Miami. So I don't see how, in the long term, this wins the president a great deal of political support. And then if you look at the actual changes that he's making, this targeting of the Cuban military, well, that's going to be really, really hard to enforce, I'm afraid.
We're going to talk more about the specifics of the policy and the people affected by the change in U.S. policy toward Cuba that will be announced later today. By President Trump. We'll have those remarks here on WLRN Friday afternoon, speaking with David Adams, senior editor for Univision, Mary Marquez, the executive editor for El Nuevo Herald. Join the conversation. Has the normalization in relations with Cuba been a topic of conversation in your household, in your community, with your friends, your family? 800-743-9576. How has normalization affected you? 800-743-WLRN. That's the telephone number as the Florida Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. It was 2.5 years ago when President Obama announced he had had a phone call that hadn't been made between Washington, D.C. and Havana in more than 50 years.
Yesterday, I spoke with Raul Castro to finalize Alan Gross's release and the exchange of prisoners. and to describe how we will move forward.
That was December 17, 2014, when President Obama began a series of orders opening up relations with Cuba, leading to an explosion of U.S. visitors. American passenger jets flying to and from the island, cruise ships floating there, hotel companies doing deals, a bank, and other businesses forging ties with Cuba. It has also led to the reopening of the U.S. Embassy on the Malecón in Havana 2 years ago this summer. Then U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called it a, quote, more promising direction.
In the United States, that means recognizing that U.S. policy is not the anvil on which Cuba's future will be forged.
Are President Trump's changes to Cuba policy announced today a return to the anvil approach toward Cuba, or a recognition of the reality that Cuba has not changed much despite the Obama-era efforts toward normalization? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Send us a tweet at WLRN to get your comments. Speaking with Mary Marquez, the executive editor of El Nuevo Herald, David Adams, senior journalist for Univision, and our Latin American correspondent Tim Padgett now joins me live here in our studio. Tim, as we take a look at these policies, two buckets, the travel policy and then kind of the money policy changes that are expected to be announced today. Miriam brought up the point earlier, the financial transaction policy that the president will direct at not funding the industrial, military, economic complex, that is a reality. How difficult is that going to be to write rules around and then enforce?
Oh, it'd be very difficult. For example, let's talk about tourists, or, excuse me, can't use that word, visitors from the U.S. To Cuba. Right now they're being told probably that they will not be allowed to stay in state-run hotels, or at least hotels that are owned by the military and security services, which are considered repressive institutions. Here's the problem with that. Gaviota, the military institution that owns so many holdings in the tourism industry there, they only really run about 40% of Cuba's state-run hotels. Non-military establishments like Cubanacan and Gran Caribe own more than 40%. So that's still a place for U.S. visitors to go to in terms of state-run hotels that don't fall under that transaction with the military prohibition that we're talking about.
And Miriam, the reality on the island for visitors, it's not like there's a good housekeeping stamp of approval or a AAA rating on the door that identifies a hotel as a part of the military arm of tourism within Cuba, is there?
No, absolutely not. And people really don't care, you know, about that. They just want to go and do their tourist thing. That's going to be really difficult. It's going to be hard to monitor this. And I think the rules are they're going to have to be all these nonprofits and all these church groups and all these other groups that have been going. In a way, there will be an economic infusion somewhat here, which will be under the Obama plan. Some of these travel agencies that had dealt with travelers to Cuba in these special plans had kind of lost their way, and they were trying to find ways to recreate themselves and reinvent themselves. Now they're back in business because there will be some restrictions, and they'll be able to help people navigate through them.
And David Adams with Univision, that's because the 12 categories that allows an American to travel to Cuba will remain intact under the Trump policy, but the individual so-called people-to-people exchanges will be restricted in a way that they weren't under the Obama interpretation of the policy. So it will allow American visitors to only go in groups that can still self-certify and self-select as part of those 12 categories. Is that right?
That's exactly right. I'll give you an example. There's a lady who works in our newsroom, and her sister used to work for one of these groups and regularly took tours down to Cuba. She's Cuban, or Cuban-American. She lost her job last year because the tours started to lose clients because people were going individually. So she might very well get her job back as more people sign on for tours in the future. And let's be clear about one thing. We're talking only now about American visitors or non-Cuban U.S. visitors. Let's turn the clock back to 2009 when President Obama took office. Under the Bush administration, Cuban Americans were only allowed to visit Cuba for 2 weeks every 3 years and were only allowed to send $300 every quarter to their families. We're not even talking now about that. So, you know, it's interesting to look back and see how this policy has evolved. Cuban Americans are signing many Cuban Americans are signing a big relief today that they're actually not affected at all, except this issue of, you know, what hotel can I stay in?
Right. And Tim, this was a little bit of the same logic that we think President Trump may have used, that President Obama used in repealing those restrictions, which was to try to have policy that is as directed as possible to the individual Cuban or the household in Cuba,
well, exactly,
not the regime.
And I think that's going to be one of the fascinating things to watch for now when this policy goes into effect. For example, I mean, Miriam was making a good point that there was an understanding that these groups going into Cuba from the United States were tacitly required to stay in state-run hotels. Now that Trump has turned this sort of on its ear, are we going to see the Cuban government allow more of these groups to stay at what's called casa particulares,
sure,
privately run B&Bs, etc.? And if so, how are those casa particulares, which are usually only accommodating maybe one or two people at a time, will they now adjust their business model to try to accommodate the groups that are going to be coming in from the United States? Could we see, for example, these casa particulares form themselves into what are known as colectivos, collectives, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, that we see in other...
The cooperatives, you know, yeah.
Cooperatives that we see in other sectors of the economy there. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch.
I want to get to the phone calls here in a moment. Hold on the line, but David and Miriam, how about that idea that a tighter restriction of the policies that President Obama put in place, arguably, when it comes to travel, is what the Trump administration will likely propose, and it could create even more opportunity for that private enterprise on the island?
I think it's a non-starter. I mean, it's just logistically impossible, like Tim said. And these casa particulares are, by and large, very small, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 rooms. There's a few now that have gotten a little bit bigger, and they are, as Tim said, getting organized into a more of a cooperative structure. But you can't have a group. The New York Times travel company, which puts people up in nice hotels, isn't going to go to a casa particular. What will happen, someone suggested to me this morning, is, the Latin American and the European tourists will all be put by the Cuban government in Cuban military-run hotels, and the U.S. visitors will all be put in the non-military-run hotels. It'll be like a shell game. It won't actually really make much difference at all. Remember, it's the Cuban government who decides where you go anyway. They approve these tour groups and which hotels they can apply for hotels. They don't necessarily get the hotel they want. It's the Cuban government that tells them where they have to stay.
Well, one point, David, I would make, though, is that we have seen travel companies, not just in Miami, but elsewhere in the United States, who have been adjusting and organizing group packages to Cuba in casas particulares. They've been looking for ways to, you know, logistically to accommodate that, and what they call socially conscious travel, you know, for these groups. I talked to a supper club out of Austin, Texas, for example, that had about a dozen members who were put into casas particulares through a package.
Miriam, how about this idea that whether or not the Trump tighter restrictions on the rules could create a private enterprise opportunity on the island?
I think one of the lessons that came out of the Obama changes were twofold. Private enterprise started to flourish, and in fact, several of the cuentapropistas, the entrepreneurs that were coming back and forth to Miami and to the island, were telling us, and they'd come to visit us here at the Herald. What we want is more of an opening. We want to be able to buy things wholesale, for instance. Right now, they're forcing us to buy everything retail, and it's very hard for us to make a living then. This was everything from doll makers to restaurant owners. So that's one of the things. The other thing is technology and communications, and how much now today so many more Cubans are connected. And we see that. We see that here, just how many folks are coming into stories from El Nuevo Herald, from Cuba, that before were very minimal, was essentially those who had access worked for the Cuban government in certain security type of jobs. So those two things have been an opening. They're not necessarily going to our site, by the way. They're coming in through Facebook. They're you know, the social media. That opens up a whole opportunity. And those two things were important moves that really have started to change the thinking in Cuba of the people, and that's important. But other things that the administration did, the previous administration, were really kind of failures, were seen as, by many of us who grew up there or left there, and as there was no mention of human rights, right. The repression against dissidents increased, even though they would be able to come and go from time to time, they were still being limited. And oh, by the way, still Cuba does not let every Cuban American who wants to go there, go there. So there are still a lot of things that needed to be worked out. And of course, they were allowing military people and you know, spies, essentially, mm-hmm. to come and go to the U.S., and that was problematic. So those things have been removed already, most of them, by the Trump administration through executive orders. And this will be interesting. I think it is a recognition that not the way it was working before was not working right, and the way it was working previous to Obama was not working right. This is kind of half the baby, and we'll see if it goes anywhere more. We're not even talking about Venezuela here, but that is a key thing to what might happen in Cuba, because whatever happens in Venezuela right now is impacting Cuba tremendously, mm-hmm. the oil, petroleum, their economy. Yep. And so that's part of the thinking as we go through and Raul Castro stepping down next year. All of that is going to be fast forwarded.
All of that coming to bear on a Friday afternoon here in Miami. Air Force One has landed at Miami International Airport just around 12:30 p.m. Eastern time here in Miami on Friday afternoon. The president certain to be en route to his destination in Little Havana to make the policy changes public. In the meantime, this is the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. 800-743-9576 is the telephone number, 800-743-WLRN. Let's begin in Miami. Teresa is joining the Roundup. Teresa, you're on the radio. Hello, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Teresa. I am a second-generation Cuban-American. My parents came in the 80s, right before the Mariel. Donald Trump has been a topic in my dinner table almost every night. I think a lot of voters were persuaded, mainly voters that come from parents like mine that struggled a lot to come to the United States, to go for Donald Trump because of the idea that he was going to fix this, the coming and going from Cuba. Mm-hmm. For example, my mom can't go to Cuba with her American passport. She would have to go with her Cuban passport. And my mom left when she was like 9. So I think this reform is going to come in a very good time for everyone.
Teresa, you support the tighter restrictions that we expect to hear from the president today then?
I support them, but I think they're going to be very hard when it comes down to the hotels, as you guys were explaining, mm-hmm. Because a lot of people that go in the church groups and the other groups, a lot of them sign up because they have family over there, and usually they don't stay at the hotels. They try to stay with their family.
Sure.
That's the little time that they get to spend with them. English as a second language advisor at Miami-Dade College, and I see it every day where they're like, no, I have to save this up because I have to go to Cuba and help out my family. I don't know how that's going to affect them, but I know that in the long run, it's going to be better for Cuba and it's going to be better for us.
Teresa,
in the sense that,
We got it. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and a little bit of sitting around the dinner table there with you and your folks and your family. We appreciate it. I want to go to Singer Island. Emma is joining the Florida Roundup. Emma, you are on the radio. Go ahead. Your thoughts.
Hi there. I'm a third generation Cuban American, and I just think this is ridiculous. Everything that Trump is doing is rolling things backwards. I have a cruise with 16 of my friends planned in December on a people-to-people visa, and it's up in the air at this point what's going to happen, whether we'll be allowed to go there or not. This is a tiny little island. We're allowed to go to Vietnam. We're allowed to go to Russia. I just don't understand this. I think it's ridiculous.
Emma, let me tackle the first question you had about your trip. Tim, the way that we understand what the president will be announcing today essentially is putting this directive into two agencies to write the rules, the mm-hmm. Commerce Department and the Treasury Department. Right. Mm-hmm. Those rules will still have to be written before any of this really becomes enforceable.
Right, but senior White House officials told us last night that a lot of the directives about no transactions with the military-run enterprises won't apply to what they called, you know, air and sea channels. So it's looking like they're going to make a concession for the airlines and the cruise lines.
Right.
So if you do have a cruise plan, maybe you don't have to worry so much.
Yeah, David Adams, senior editor with Univision, I know your time is tight with us here because you're on deadline, like a lot of us here this afternoon. But to Emma's question there about a future planned trip, could that be impacted by the rules the Treasury and Commerce are going to have to write over the next 30 days? We have lost our connection to Doral and our studios there, but we will get back to them momentarily. Emma, just one other quick question regarding your thoughts about the restrictions on Americans. This is a common theme that we heard 2.5 years ago from President Obama talking about the restrictions on the U.S. policy toward Cuba were on Americans and didn't work. How has that affected you over the past 2.5 years?
Well, I'm just hopeful that people on a tiny island are going to be able to be helped. There are families there. I know there are Cuban Americans in Miami, older generation, that are very upset and want to continue to keep us away and not help the island. But they have family members there that would benefit from this. So I simply don't understand this. I think it's too long going on, and it needs to stop.
Emma joining us from Singer Island here on the Florida Roundup. Emma, thank you for your time. President Trump has gotten off Air Force One, which is on the ground at Miami International Airport, and entered into the presidential limousine. The motorcade is on the tarmac here just at 12:39 on Friday afternoon, moving toward Little Havana. So if you're caught in traffic in those areas of South Florida and Miami, you'll know why over the next couple of hours. We will bring the president's remarks live to you here on WLRN. It's the Florida Roundup. Tom Hudson here along with my colleague Tim Padgett. Miriam Marquez, executive editor for El Nuevo Herald, is with us from our studios in Doral. We are correcting that technical difficulty. David Adams was with us previously. He, a senior editor at Univision, had to leave, as a lot of journalists in this town on significant deadlines here today. Join the conversation, though. Cuba policy changes under President Obama, some of them being rolled back today under President Trump. What do the past 2.5 years look like for you and your family, your business, if you have connections to the island, or friends and family or neighbors who have connections? 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. In North Miami, Omar is joining us. Omar, welcome to the Florida Roundup. You're on the radio.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
I'm very, very concerned about the changes in Cuba. I'm afraid that this emerging middle class, the Polidares, they are going to be stifled if things go back to where they were. 40 years didn't work, and as people are emerging and making money, private industry is happening. It's troubling to me, as well as the fact that Mr. Trump, who has significant hotel interests, is going to close down. I mean, it's almost like he's trying to stack the deck in favor of Trump hotels. Really, I'm very worried about the Cuban people. I'm a second generation Cuban. I fear for the people of Cuba who are working and have been, you know, a hard scrabble existence, and they're just being set back on their heels. And I just wanted to make that comment.
Omar, we got the comment. Thank you. I'm going to put that to Mary Marquez, executive editor of El Nuevo. Like Senator Rubio, Representative Diaz-Balart have been pushing the Trump administration to roll back some of these Obama-era policies because, in their estimation, the United States hasn't gotten anything in return from the Cuba government for opening up these economic opportunities.
Okay. I think that we have to be clear about one thing. Whatever happens, whatever policy the U.S. has, the Cuban government will dictate the terms. And what am I saying?
I'm
saying
dictate the terms of the American
policy? Dictate the terms of how it will be implemented. Why? Because they'll find a runaround and a way to around some of the policies. That's mm-hmm. one. Two, because in the last 2 years under the Obama policy, you're not reading this in the New York Times every day. You're not, but those who cover Cuba every day and in this town know that the Cuban government cracked down on the independent taxi drivers, mm-hmm. the paladares, and the B&Bs. How did they do that? By imposing higher tariffs on them, by going in and actually closing them down, by telling them that they didn't have enough licenses. So in a way, as much as there has been a movement, and I acknowledge it, and I would never, you know, try to hide the fact that this has been a much, much more of an opening, as I suggested before, for the people. The Cuban government has still, when they see that you're doing too much or making too much, they're going to try to stop it because they fear exactly what the Obama plan was, that the with more prosperity, people would start to stop thinking about how to feed themselves the next day and start focusing on their rights. So that is the model that can work. Unfortunately, when we look to China and Vietnam, we know that those are single-party governments, mm-hmm. and they still have tremendous abuses in human rights. So that part is not, you know, solid. We don't have a history of showing that economics will bring anything more than a rising middle class, perhaps, but not necessarily a change in power and right. more democracy. But so with that said, I think that this is, to me, it's a middle ground. And again, I go back to what's happening in the rest of Latin America and at the OAS and everything else may determine more than anything that the U.S. does.
I would just make one addendum to what Miriam's saying, though. A lot of Cuban analysts, though, I mean, she makes a very good point about China, Vietnam, et cetera, but the one distinction that a lot of Cuban analysts make with regards to Cuba is that Cuba's regime is much more dependent on that cult of the Castros, and we've got one down, one to go. And once the Castros are out of the picture, there's a lot of feeling that things, that the economic prosperity factor could play a bigger role in changing Cuba than it did, for example, in China.
The hardliners would argue that's a bet the United States has been making for 60 plus years.
I think they made it for more than 50 years, though, with perhaps a policy that failed. And I think Obama's bet was, well, let's try it with a more open approach, mm-hmm. and then it will at least be positioned better to effect change when the Castros are gone.
More of your phone calls here as we await President Trump in Miami making an announcement regarding policy towards Cuba. That announcement will be live here on WLRN on this Friday afternoon, 800-743-9576. More of your phone calls still to come as the Florida Roundup continues after this.
We're funded by WLRN members and by the law firm of Stearns, Weaver, Miller, Weisler, Olideff, and Citizen PA, with offices throughout Florida. Proud to be WLRN's longest continuous corporate underwriter.
We know sleep is essential for all species. Most humans have comfortable quarters to attain it and no reason to fear attack while in bed. Then why is there often such frustration over it? Hello, Bonnie Berman here. Monday's Topical Currents is with journalist and Emory English professor Benjamin Reese. He's written Wild Nights, How Taming Sleep Created Our Restless World. Can you believe there's a sleep magazine? It's called Van Winkle's. Listen for Topical Currents. That's Monday at 1 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. President Donald Trump returning to Miami today to fulfill his campaign pledge to roll back his successor's efforts toward more travel and trade with Cuba. The changes from President Trump go after the legacy of President Obama in Cuba. It was just 15 months ago that he was the first president in almost a century to visit the island.
I have come here to bury the last remnant of the Cold War in the Americas.
George Blatt lives in Miami. He says he left Cuba with his parents and siblings when he was 10 years old.
I think anything that opens up the market to the country, I know that they still have a dictatorship, but we need to open up more and create more interaction between the U.S. and Cuba. Because what we have done in the past has not worked. The embargo was something that came from the Cold War from the 1960s. That was a different time, and I believe that we need to evolve.
The trade embargo remains today as it did under President Obama. Steve Cabeza lives in Hallandale Beach here in South Florida, and he wants business engagement to continue.
There's too much economic potential there, especially for South Florida. with the shipping and the flights and the private boats and the diving and the eco travel and the resorts, and the list just goes on and on. Telecommunications, export, import. Why that place is just an untapped gem for potential economic growth and development. Why would we not pluck that peach? It's right here. Just is crazy to me. It seems stubborn and ill thought out.
Add your thoughts on this. 800-743-WLRN. Do you endorse continued engagement such as the Obama policies, travel and trade, or do you prefer tighter restrictions as we anticipate President Trump to announce here on this Friday? 800-743-9576. Tim Padgett with us, my colleague here at WLRN. Mira Marquez, executive editor with El Nuevo Herald, is with us from our studios in Doral. Patrick Ottman joins us now from Havana, where he covers Cuba and the Caribbean, Latin America for CNN. Patrick, first of all, do you anticipate the president's remarks to be carried live, to be accessible in Havana for Cubans this afternoon?
No, we just called over to Cuban television, and it's a state-run broadcaster, which means they control the airwaves. It's the only television that Cubans can see is state-run TV, and I called and talked to an official and said, will it be on? And he just laughed and said, there's no way. What is interesting is on the main newspaper here, the Communist Party Daily, Granma, there's, for the first time that I remember, a live blogging session going on where they are reacting and responding, obviously, with a very pro-government tilt. Of course, only people who have internet can see that, and most Cubans don't have internet in their homes, so it really seems more for an international audience than for the Cuban domestic audience. I expect later on portions of the speech will be shown, put in the Cuban government's context, but I have no expectation that the speech will be shown live or in its entirety.
For the domestic audience in Cuba, has there been any media coverage of this announcement, of this policy change or policy restrictions to be announced?
It's on page 7 today of the newspaper. And you think this is the country that's going to be most affected by the changes, and there's been very, very little coverage. We've been covering it now for weeks. And in the state-run media, there's been almost no coverage. I think they're trying to play it down and show that there won't be a big impact, because anytime you mention the United States changing policies, people, Cubans, get nervous because they know it could have a major impact on their lives, on the very fragile economy here.
Patrick, this is Tim Padgett. Could you share with us the quote from a senior Cuban official that you tweeted out last night that I think was sort of telling with regards to their response to Trump's policy changes?
And they have been on edge because they follow this a lot. And certainly over the weekend, you remember, Tim, that people were talking that perhaps this would affect Cuban Americans' travel, remittances,
right,
that the changes would be much more significant than we'd initially been led to believe. Once we got a lot of the details yesterday and Cuban officials were able to digest them, I called one very late last night, and he said, I'm going to bed and I'm going to sleep fine. Because if this is all it is, we've dealt with 60 years of some of the toughest sanctions U.S. has on any country in the world, and they feel that they have survived and withstood those sanctions, and they, seeing what President Trump is proposing, really weren't that scared by that. And, of course, they have that luxury for the Cuban who has moved back to open up an Airbnb or a restaurant, anticipating a wave of American visitors. This is incredibly disappointing news.
Patrick Ottman is with us, CNN in Havana, here on the Florida Roundup. Patrick, give us a sense of the American business footprint and how it's changed over the past 2.5 years in Havana. We've heard about hotel deals and partnerships and joint ventures with tourism arms in Cuba that represent military interests or intelligence interests. But what's been the outward view of those American companies that are beginning to show up on your shores?
That you have any footprint at all is, of course, something quite new. The fact that I can, right around the corner from my house, there's an American Airlines office. There is one American-run hotel, the Four Points by Sheraton. What you have is a long line of people up until now representing American companies that want to do business here. But, of course, it's very difficult because you have to partnership with the Cuban government. It's not a very clear process. It's not a very efficient process. There are some allegations of corruption. So I think up until now, there have been companies that want to see what they can do within the restrictions of the embargo, perhaps a lot of those companies are going to get scared off, because just look what happened to Sheridan. If we understand these regulations correctly, and there's still some work to be done there, but Sheridan, because it has a relationship with Gaviota, an arm, the tourism arm of the Cuban military, they are now prohibited from having Americans stay in their hotel. So you're an American hotel company that can't host Americans. That's not why they got into Cuba.
Patrick Hopman, covering Havana, Cuba, Latin America, and the Caribbean for CNN. Patrick, thanks for joining us again on the Florida Rondo. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Miriam Marquez, executive editor for El Nuevo Herald. I want to stay on this topic of big business interests on the part of American corporations. They've been tentative getting in. It's been really focused, obviously, on the hospitality side. But what we anticipate to hear from President Trump will not impact two significant transportation methods, the cruise industry, which continues to add cruise ships into Port Havana and other ports of call, and, of course, the airline industry. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that there are vested interests, and there's been a lot of investment placed into these new ventures. And to a certain degree, what you're going to have is smaller groups going, for instance, through cruise ships. And it's you go to established places where you can see, and then you come right back on the ship. So there's a little less money going to the Cuban government. Obviously, you're not staying there for various days. You're just there for a day trip, like you go to any other island in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And so that's a different dynamic. It definitely is going to affect South Florida one way or another, because our economy is tied to the Caribbean and to Latin America, and there's a lot of opportunity in Cuba. That said, how much of it will be affected, I don't think will be great, because it has taken a long time to do any of these things in the last 2 years. It hasn't been an easy process. The Cuban government is sluggish, as your CNN correspondent was mentioning.
And some of the American corporations would argue the U.S. government has been sluggish in terms of approving the licenses for them to begin businesses.
Right, and it's going to get worse, right?
Yeah, right.
You would imagine it will get worse, but I think there's more opportunities. It's definitely a much more so than when Obama entered office and the Bush plan that was so restrictive, which all that did was create a whole underground of ways for people to get money in there anyway.
Let me squeeze in a couple of more calls here. We'll begin in Davie. Susan has been on the line. Susan, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Your thoughts.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my daughter's fiance's family are Cuban and came around the time of the Mariel. Some of them did. And being able to travel, I know I heard them talking about how, it's the way they can travel back and forth if you're Cuban is not going to be changed and it's different. But it became much easier for them to go back and forth the last year than it was before. And they have family members on the island, people that have been sick and all that kind of stuff, and it's just made it so much easier. They don't like Castro. That's why they left. This is just going to make their lives harder. And I know it will.
Yeah, Susan, thanks for that impression there. I want to stay in Broward County. Steve is joining us from Fort Lauderdale. Steve, you're on the roundup. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'll make this quick because I get nervous on the air. But I just wanted to say that I'm tired of all the negative talk about Cuba, just like the last caller who said it's easier for travel back and forth. Let's leave it alone like that. Obama was right. Who cares about big business? They got too much money anyway. Let's focus on the people that are starving to death in Africa. Thank you.
All right, Steve, we appreciate your thoughts. Andy Gomez is joining us now here on the Roundup. Professor Gomez is the former senior fellow at the University of Miami's Institute for Cuban and Cuban American Studies. Andy, nice to have you back on WLRN.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Tell us your thoughts on the evolution of what we are to hear from the president today. And specifically, what I'm curious about is what we won't hear from the president, but perhaps had been on the table for consideration as he launched this review of the Obama-era Cuba policy, really during his first week of his presidency.
Well, I can tell you for at least the last 2 weeks that I've been in contact with my sources in Washington, D.C., this thing has been going back and forth between the White House lawyers and the Treasury Department lawyers. What you're not going to hear today is exactly what the White House wanted to do, which was a much tougher stand on the Cuba policy than what they're going to present. For instance, they really wanted to revoke the permits that have been given to people like Marriott and Starwood to do business in Cuba. And the Treasury Department kept saying, well, you can't do that because those are already existing contracts. They wanted to curtail the cruise industry. They wanted to curtail the airline travel. They all also wanted to allow Cuban Americans to travel only once a year to Cuba. They wanted to cut the remittances. Now, why all these changes? Simple. It's politics. Keep in mind that for the last 60 years, most, I'll say all U.S. presidents, Democrats and Republicans, have come to South Florida and what they have called their foreign policy towards Cuba has actually been domestic policy towards a Cuban-American community, which has changed drastically in the last 20 years. Let me be specific. In the district that Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart has, the majority of those Cubans today arrived after 1990. Those are the ones that have families in Cuba. Those are the ones that travel to Cuba more often. So you would have been penalizing those Cubans from going back, and many of them have become U.S. citizens, which I'm sure it would have turned out in the next poll when he ran. It might have been a challenge.
Andy Gomez is with us, former senior fellow at University of Miami's Institute for Cuban American Studies. Professor Gomez, stick with us here. Miriam Marquez is the executive editor at El Nuevo Herald with us from our studios at El Nuevo and the Miami Herald in Doral. She will stay with us as well. And Tim Padgett, my colleague that covers Cuba and Latin America for us here at WLRN, with us in studios. Our special coverage of President Trump's comments on Cuba policy will begin in a moment. But we do want to thank everybody who's still on the telephone. Stick with us here. A special edition of the Florida Roundup will continue. It is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato, our digital director. WLRN's program director is Peter Merritt. And our technical supervisor is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to the Roundup. More special coverage continues in a moment.